for this evening for this section is by Dr. Jeffrey Parsons. He is a distinguished professor of psychology and public health at Hunter College and the Graduate Center of the City University of New York, as well as the director of the Center for HIV Educational Studies and Training. So please welcome Dr. Parsons.
Thank you. Good evening for those of you that have stuck it out through a long day. So I'm going to start, well, by saying that I have nothing to disclose. We've already sort of covered some of the background. It's nice sort of going at the end of a series of talks on this, but we know that a lot is going on with older adults living with HIV, which doesn't lend itself to a nice acronym, but we came up with OALWA. Just because it's easier than spelling it out each time. But we know that this population is rapidly growing, and as you've heard, that in 2010, the CDC's count surpassed 314,000, and by 2015, we have this magic number of about half of positive people will be age 50 or older. And so a lot of recent studies have started to address a relatively under-researched population. And so issues around comorbidities, risk behaviors, some prevention issues, some studies on medication adherence, certainly we've heard some things today on stigma, social support, but there are still some areas that have not really received a lot of attention in the literature. And one of those has to do with substance use in this population. And it's tricky because when we talk about substance use, we really have to talk about alcohol and drugs, and we have to talk about the drugs, whether they're illicit or not, because the abuse of prescription drugs among older people in general is problematic because they're either not able to follow their doctor's recommendations or the prescription because they're not perhaps cognitively processing the information correctly, or they're just choosing to take more than has been prescribed, so we can't sort of leave out that aspect of it. We have to look at alcohol and multiple drugs, recognizing that polydrug use is quite common among substance users. And we also need to start looking at frequency of use rather than just kind of a dichotomous, does someone use or does someone not use? And typically, the data that we have on substance use in this population has been limited to yes, no, because it's typically been in, and we're all guilty of these ridiculously long surveys because we've got one shot and we want to try to capture as much information as we can on these folks. So we tend to go with kind of the shortest way possible of collecting that data. Obviously, we need to know more than just whether they're using. We need to know how frequently they are. So older adults, in general, get neglected in substance use research, but we do have some studies that have shown us a few things. We know that for HIV-positive older people, their substance use is higher than older people who do not have HIV. We also know that substance use is a strong predictor of poor adherence to medications, and that the use of multiple substances is common, but again, we have challenges in quantifying and operationalizing the frequency of the use, because often we just know that they're using multiple drugs. We don't necessarily know, are they combining them in the same day, and what type of effect might that be having? So the purpose of the current study was to really look at patterns of substance use in this population and look at some associations between those substance use patterns and medication adherence for these positive men and women. And we also looked at the associations between the substance use patterns and subjective measures of the severity or impairment, using a measure of the DAS-10 for severity and impairment of drug use and the AUDIT-C for severity and impairment of alcohol use. And this is from a larger study called WISE, which is an intervention targeting substance using older adults with HIV, with a lovely donation by the National Institute of Drug Abuse. So for our methods, we are recruiting HIV-positive older adults, age 50 and older. They can be straight, gay, or bisexual. They're all in the New York City metropolitan area. We're conducting a preliminary screening with them to determine eligibility for the larger project. And so this is a telephone screening interview where we collect basic demographics, information on recent adherence, recent substance use, and we use the DAST and the audit. The larger project, which I won't be presenting data on, also collects biological measures. It does a retrospective timeline follow-back for sex behavior and drug use to look at the co-occurrence of that. Clinical interviews, neurocognitive measures, there's an intervention, there's follow-ups. So there's a lot of the bigger study, but I'm just focusing on the screening data because that's the data we have. So we've screened 557 older adults thus far. As you can see through the demographics, the majority of them are African American. About 68% are male, and the large proportion of gay and bisexual are predominantly the males who are enrolled in the study. So we conducted latent class analyses to look at the patterns of substance use. And what came up were four distinct groups, and then we created the fifth group of non-users. But for the four groups, occasional drinkers, people who combined alcohol and marijuana, people who combined alcohol and crack or cocaine, and people who were really reporting multiple substances, which typically included alcohol, marijuana, crack cocaine, plus they added bonus of crystal meth, opiates, poppers, something like that. And one thing that I think is really important, because again, when we talk about substance use, we tend to focus on illicit drugs, is notice the alcohol running throughout. In all of the classes, alcohol sort of becomes an issue, and you'll see sort of how problematic that is. So this is some basic demographic differences, and it's a lot of data, so I'm going to highlight the key differences here. We saw more heterosexual identified men in the alcohol and crack cocaine group. We saw more gay and bisexual men in the multiple substance use. This is typical in what we would see in other population-based studies in terms of those kinds of differences. We also saw that people who were in the two, if you will sort of categorize them as the worst classes in terms of the most problematic drugs or the drugs that we think of as most problematic, they were the ones who were least likely to have an undetectable viral load. No differences in age, in race, in whether they were partnered or how long they had been on medication. So, the good news. Sorry, I don't want to skip over the good news. The good news is most of them are pretty adherent to their medications. And other studies have actually found this, that adherence rates tend to be higher among older adults living with HIV than among younger adults. And so what we see in our study was an average of 2.5 missed days in the past 30 days, which would equate to about a 92% rate of adherence, which we're usually pretty happy if folks do that. Other studies have shown this. 40% of our sample missed no days in the last 30, and 12% missed only one day. So overall, relatively high rates of medication adherence. Where it gets complex is when you start to break it down into these different groups and the patterns of substance use. So the non-users and the drinkers, the occasional drinkers, are pretty equivalent in terms of their missed medication days. The marijuana and alcohol group, that's when you start to get significant problems, when you sort of add marijuana to the occasion. And then the problems get exacerbated when you add crack and cocaine or other drugs to the situation. That's when you see significantly higher rates of non-adherence in this sample. So this is looking at their scores on the audit. Obviously, if they are not a user, they'll have a zero score. But one of the things to note is the sort of cutoff for hazardous drinking for females and the cutoff for hazardous drinking for males. And you'll see across all the users on the far left and the four classes, pretty much everybody's drinking at the level of hazardous drinking. We don't see a lot of kind of benign, you know, let's have a cocktail on the weekend when work's done on a Friday afternoon type of drinking. We tend to see some pretty heavy drinking in this population. Either they're not drinking, or if they are drinking, they're drinking pretty heavily. And again, the multiple substance use group having the most highest level of that. This is the drug impairment for the DAS. The occasional drinkers were not enough of them were using drugs in that classification to have audit scores greater than zero. But again, the sort of classification for intermediate problematic use versus a substantial indication of use, you really start to see that substantial use in the two classifications to the farthest right, when you add crack and cocaine or when they're using multiple drugs in addition to alcohol, marijuana, and crack. So that's where the biggest sort of level of self-reported impairment is. So the current findings give us a little insight into the sort of adherence difficulties of a group that's pretty rarely studied and a group that presents with a fair amount of substance use in the first place. We sort of get, you know, some peculiarities, though, in terms of type of substance is having a specific effect on adherence. Multiple substance use, particularly problematic for adherence. And the idea that you've got to really include alcohol in the consideration of this because it was running through all of the classes and a pretty pervasive problem among this population. We're also finding that counting the frequency of use is going to be more informative than just dichotomizing that. And we're really looking forward to the timeline follow-back data where we'll be able to sort of look at day-level associations between frequency of drug and alcohol use, medication non-adherence, as well as potential sexual risk behavior. So individuals in the alcohol and marijuana class reported more days of alcohol use than those in the alcohol and crack cocaine class, but the audit C scores across the two classes didn't differ. So we're seeing some potential situations in which certain combinations may be more problematic, and certain combinations may be leading to more problems even associated with just alcohol. What you're combining alcohol with may exacerbate your problems that are directly related back to alcohol. The alcohol impairment significantly elevated in the multiple substance use class, and the drug impairment significantly elevated in the crack cocaine and the multiple substance use class. We see that there's some implications for treatments here, and the idea of tailoring interventions to target type of substances rather than just sort of let's give all drug users the same type of intervention, we may want to do some targeting and some tailoring of the types of information, education, and prevention approaches that we would use. Integrating adherence interventions within substance use interventions for older people with HIV would be a sort of smart move, and not just assuming that because older people are more adherent that they don't require adherence education, but it may be that in clinic settings, for example, you can really triage the older individuals and really focus the adherence counseling on those who report multiple use of different drugs. And again, sort of acknowledging that adherence is not just a problem for those who are using all the different types of drugs, but even those who are just using alcohol and marijuana, they're still having much more challenges than just even the drinkers are. This is a very specific sample. It's New York City, it's urban, it's predominantly Black and African American. There's an overrepresentation of those who are engaged with service providers based on how we're recruiting. So this is a snapshot of what this kind of looks like in our unique sort of situation. The substance use questions did not get at, you know, the last day you used marijuana, did you also use crack cocaine that day? So we don't have that level of detail with the screening. Again, for the full study, we will. As I just said, yeah. So the baseline interview does include that day-level analyses that we'll be able to look at very soon. So I'd like to acknowledge the team at CHEST, the folks who helped put the slides together, particularly Jeremy Eggleston, our NIDA project officers and our participants who have been great. This is even the phone screening can be tough for people, but then when they come in for the two-part baseline assessment, they're really kind of making a commitment. So we're very pleased with them. And that's my contact information. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Parsons. Now we have time for questions. We have about 12 minutes. So does anybody in the audience have questions for any of our speakers? Let's go in the back first. Yes.
Right. We didn't assess income for the screener. For the phone screener, we were really trying to tap into things that are indicative of eligibility for the broader study. So we don't have that data for the screening. We will for the full study, because we do assess it in the basic demographics. But we don't know it for the screener.
The other study was like $10,000.
Well, and if you're on if you're on a limited income and living in a place like New York City and spending a significant portion of that income on drugs, you're probably experiencing even more financial hardship than other folks.
So you probably did not identify as a homeless.
We did not. Actually, no, we did, because to be eligible for the study, they
they couldn't be marginally housed. So we do have that data. I'm not 100% sure what it is, but we would know that.
Yes.
Thank you, Dr. Questions. Yes?
I also have a question for you. You said up front that with substance users that they were less adherent to their meds, but then older adults had a better adherence rate, except for we done with the poly use. Was that directly correlated because of the age, or was there some other stabilizing factor? Was it just a function of age?
Well, it's a function of different studies. That's part of the problem. One study compared adherence among older people with HIV and younger people with HIV, and then a different study or series of studies looked at substance use differences between older people with HIV and older people without HIV. So what we're really saying is, because this is a relatively new area, kind of a piecemeal approach, we don't have a lot of studies that are fully comprehensive. I mean, we've seen one example today of a study that does kind of have a more comprehensive approach, and then our full trial will also have a kind of comprehensive data, but right now we just don't know.
Oh, because, I mean, in age, once you get to some unknown certain point, whoever you are, your likelihood of taking the meds go down because you might forget or whatever other reason.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons why in our trial we're doing neurocognitive measures to look at that as a moderator of intervention effect.
Something with older adults with HIV, the number of comorbidities and plastic treatment,
They
actually have to be more cautious in the way they stay on. I think it does have their effects.
Is there any? Yes, over here.
Just have a question, I guess, for any of the speakers. We talk about older adults and groups, but are you looking at all at like age of diagnosis, how long they've had HIV? I mean, I assume we're going to see a difference, especially in things like depression.
Some people
who were diagnosed 2 years ago.
We did look at that. So pretty consistently across studies, about 15% of people who were over 50 with HIV were diagnosed over 50. So it's a growing number actually of people who are actually some of them are people who have been affected for a while. A lot of people are actually getting infected, in older age. And what we also look at is with shame, people who were older when they were diagnosed had more shame.
Is there any other questions from the audience? Yes, sir.
I'm curious, the resilience study, if you try testing resilience at all as a moderator of the associations as opposed to a mediator?
I think we thought about that. I'm not sure.
Okay. I'd be curious to see if it actually buffers the effect of.
Yeah, that's actually yes.
Is there any other questions from the audience? Well, let's thank our speakers. Thank you, everyone, for coming today. As a reminder, the HIV section social hour is at 6:30 to 8 in room 109B. Thank you for coming, and once again, let's thank our speakers.